This is The Mary Davis Show, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with interviews, news, special features, and the community calendar. Now, here is your host, Mary Davis.
Good morning and welcome. I'm your host, Mary Davis, and the show, of course, is The Mary Davis Show. Around our table and on our live line, our guest that you're probably familiar with now in The Mary Davis Show and probably know what the topic is going to be since it has been all over the news this last week. And that's Frank Gist. He writes a column in the Buffalo Criterion called Is That Right? He is also in business, and his business is Greater Buffalo Bail Bond. And then there's Gary Earl Ross, who is a playwright. He is a retired educator from SUNY. And then there's Joan Simmons, and she is the founder of a very long name of her organization, Niagara Frontier Movement for the Advocacy of African Americans Human Rights Incorporated. And then there's Terry McKelvey, who will be joining us in a few minutes, and he is an attorney. And what we're going to be talking about today is what's happened in South Carolina. I think so many things have come out of that. And the one thing that's really struck me, and I know all of these people have gotten some history about these things, is, and that is the try to write the rewriting of history as far as many Southern white people thing. Like the one man who later said that the Confederacy and the battle flag, which actually was a battle flag of Northern Virginia, Lee's army, had nothing whatsoever to do with slavery. I almost fell off my chair when I was listening to this man saying this. And I can just imagine how many whites think that the battle of the Civil War was all about some cultural changes and states' rights and that they were a country invaded. Never knowing or probably never knew or conveniently forgotten was it was a traitorous revolt. They were the Confederacy revolted against the United States of America. That's what it was about. And they were fighting a war to maintain slavery. And as Gary Earl put it so succinctly, Ferry, what did you say it was about?
I've said this often. Most Confederate soldiers did not have enough money to own slaves. They were not fighting to preserve a lifestyle they had, but to preserve a lifestyle to which they aspired.
What I was talking about was that most whites did not, particularly current day, live in the South today, don't seem to know or have conveniently forgotten what the Civil War was about. It was about a section of the country, a section of the United States of America, that revolted against the government of the United States of America, and this is what was the cause of the Civil War. They were fighting to maintain slavery.
Absolutely. You know what, my objection is, of course, it was the symbol of slavery and the slavery of African people, but my biggest concern, and I think a gentleman said on the radio today, that it is a flag of a traitorous nation. That flag represented secession of states from the United States to form their own country. And so if these individuals who revere this flag are indeed American citizens and indeed support the inclusion of all states, all 50 states, then I can't see how they would revere that. I can understand the sentimental that their grandfather, great-grandfather, carried that flag when they die. However, that flag nation lost. And so when we became reunited, that flag should have been delegated to the museum. It should not be flown on the Capitol. And the insult, Mary, I see and outrage is here a gentleman who was murdered in a church, a pastor, who had to walk by that flag every day to work when he went to his seat as a senator and look at that flag flying proudly saying, you know what, this flag supports slavery, it supports the division of the United States, it supports a nation that seceded. So for me, that's my biggest issue. The slavery part is right, but I think what needs to be is that flag, like everyone says, should be in a museum, not flying in any public building. What they do in their own houses and their own businesses, that's a different story. That's private. But that flag should not represent a public sentiment. We fly to a capital that is a public sentiment.
Frank, what about you? What are your thoughts?
Well even
that?
The notion that it was tradition, you know, most of the people were fighting the war because they were conscripted. They didn't have, they were drafted, so they didn't have a lot of choice to fight these wars. So I think the flag is more of a symbol of evil and why these people would want to put a symbol of evil in their on their capital, or just be a symbol of being proud or whatever. I think it's kind of. I think they even starting to realize that with this latest incident, that it's time to change.
And how is corrupt people like this, Dylann Roof? You know, I mean, I when you look at what he was, you know, as Gary put it, and I won't say all things that he said, but you know, he was kind of like, more or less, this almost adolescent young man. Who thought that he was going to single-handedly start a race war. What do you think, Joan?
Well, you know, first of all, from a practical standpoint, the flags flying over the State House, which is supported by taxpayers' dollars, black and white.
And everything in between.
Is bad enough from a practical standpoint to use my taxpayers' dollars to support something as vile as that. I still don't think that most people get it, unfortunately. I don't think they understand the significance. And I don't even think it's a matter of rewriting history. I think it's just people have different interpretations of their own history. And I don't think that's unique.
I think it's because they haven't been really taught history as it was. You know, if you don't know your history, and I forgot the whole quote, you are bound to repeat it. And I think what we're seeing is a repeat of that history, basically speaking, because they don't know the history, or it has been purposely deleted or misrepresented in schools.
No, I don't think that's the case. I think everybody knows what that flag represents. Yeah.
I don't think many Southern people do.
Yes, they do. They understand.
Yeah, I mean, many Southern black people, but I don't think many Southern white people do.
Well, let me say that what happens is that it's not just what we're taught or not taught in our schools. We're kind of brainwashed by the dominant situation. You've said before, Mary, that the South won or lost the Civil War, but in a sense won the Civil War.
On the basis of race.
And you're absolutely right. What happened? Now, that battle flag did not come to prominence in terms of being displayed over Southern capitals until 1962. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what happened between 1865, the end of the war, and 1962, the election of Rutherford B. Hayes in 1876, mm-hmm. after Reconstruction and carpetbaggers were taking advantage of the South.
Moving troops out of the South.
Right. When that election was thrown into the House of Representatives, Rutherford B. Hayes said, hey, Southern representatives, if you vote for me for president, I'll pull the troops out. And pulling the troops out allowed the rise of the Ku Klux Klan as well as Jim Crow laws, which existed for another, almost 100 years, 80-some years. So through that time, we had segregation. We had separate water fountains, separate restrooms, separate mm-hmm. restaurants, and it was the law of the land. We had lynchings of about 1,300 people over
Washington,
that period of time.
The capital of the United States.
With a large percentage of blacks, yes. Mm-hmm. So segregation became the law of the land, and not just the de facto practice or de facto law, but the actual law. And so the stars and bars didn't make any appearance. It wasn't anything dramatic. It was probably on trucks, probably on stores or something. When did it get to the state capitals? 1962. What was happening then? Desegregation efforts were fully underway. This was a response to desegregation. It was not an embrace of my great-grandfather dying at the Battle of Gettysburg, but a response to, you can't come down here and tell us how to treat our colored folk.
Well, you know, the only person that probably actually lived in the South at this particular time is Bettie Jean Grant. Bettie Jean, what are your memories of this period of time?
My memory,
she didn't live in the slave time. She didn't.
I'm talking about she lived in the time. I'm talking about like 1962 when she was probably young, but she's the only one that more or less was born and grew up in the South.
Yeah, and I can. I wasn't born into slavery, but my grandfather was.
No, but you were
72, and his father was 18 years old. So my great grandfather was 18 years old when slavery ended. So, and I met his mom flew about 100 before she died, and I was like 6 years old. And she was born in slavery as well. But I can tell you, I didn't know what a Confederate flag was until I got grown and probably came to Buffalo and saw it in books and stuff, because it was not, in my part of Tennessee, that prominent. I can't ever recall, you know, any flag flying too much. Of course, the American flag flew over schools and stuff, but even in public places in my little town, Brighton, population 1,500 African American, 500 whites, I didn't see the Confederate flag on license plates or on flying on the flagpoles, because I was, you know, very noticed things that's historical from a historical perspective. So I don't know when the flag became prominent, but I would tend to believe it had to be during the Civil Rights Movement, when they went back and retrieved this relic that they had during the Civil War, but they had kind of maybe relegated to a less prominent position. So, because I really, in the 50s and the 60s, I don't remember seeing the Confederate flag as much as I do if I go down to Tennessee right now.
But you grew up in the South, so you probably remember some of the conditions there.
Oh, yeah. Hey, not being able to park, go to a public park or a public library, two separate water fountains, not being able to try on clothes before you, or shoes before you bought them. You had to go into a store and get them on site by size, and they were too small, they're just too bad, so you always got them too big because you could not try them on and bring them back or put them back on the shelf. Yeah, I remember that. I remember going to a restaurant and standing by the back door outside in the rain or in the snow or whatever it was to order food because you could not go inside and order it. So I remember it. But what I don't remember is that vile meetings. I never saw a Ku Klux Klan gathering, because the blacks there, you know, they were timid, to be honest with you. They didn't want to rock the boat.
They were controlled.
You know, they were controlled, and they were afraid to make noise. But I do remember when Martin Luther King was assassinated, my little town where we had 500 blacks did organize a march in sympathy with the sanitation workers, which in Memphis was 18 miles away. When King was assassinated, we still had that march. We still had it. Only about 10, 15 people show up to do it, but we did it. And I thought it was very courageous, because we knew, you know, what white folks thought about that, thought about us, and us, you know, we being active in the Civil Rights Movement. I remember people from my town saying that Martin Luther King was organizing marches in the late 1950s. Why don't he stay out of here? He's an agitator. They said the same thing about King as it said about Malcolm X. And this is coming from black people, not from white people.
You know, I want to go around the table just and ask anybody if they have any comments. Everyone else here did not have that experience. When you listen to someone who did have it, what do you think about that? We're going to start with Frank.
What do I think about what?
About the experiences she's talking about that she... I mean, what would you think about it? You're listening to it. You know, how much it would have been, although you never had that experience, but you're listening to someone who did. What would your thoughts have been? They said people were controlled, people were timid, people didn't say anything.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I can say is I remember visiting down south when I was a child. My grandfather was from North Carolina, and we took a road trip down south. And I remember us not being able to go into restaurants, but we would stop in the people would have their own private homes and invite people in along the roads.
I can remember some of those things too in Virginia.
Yeah, they would serve us pop and things like mm-hmm. that. And I do remember that.
Did you ever wonder why?
Did I ever wonder why?
Well,
I knew. I mean, I understood segregation. Yeah, I understood what it was. It was explained to us on its way down there. Yeah, but, you know, I was a child. Yeah.
Because that reminds me of the youngster that was killed from Chicago. What was it? It was in Mississippi.
Emmett Till.
Yeah. And even though, you know, it was a dangerous time, even though they probably knew. I can remember.
Well, that was the first time I learned about Emmett Till, because I think that was the story they told me on the way down in the car mm-hmm. about Emmett Till and don't be, you know, mm-hmm. don't be messing with white folks. I remember my grandfather saying, you know. Mm-hmm.
I can remember in Virginia as a young girl, my uncle took me shopping, and I saw a shirt that I liked, but I couldn't try it on. My uncle bought it anyway, and it was like 5 times too big for me, but no one could take it back. It was just there. Gave it to one of my older cousins who could probably wear it. But this is him, because you couldn't, this was a major kind of store, like a department store. You couldn't try on anything. It's just like Betty Jean was saying. What about you when you think of that narrative that she just said about growing up in the South?
My mother and father were both born and raised in Birmingham, Alabama. and they were part of the Great Migration. They moved to Pittsburgh to work in the mills. And traveling to Birmingham, you know, our holidays were visiting relatives. Mm-hmm. And so we would travel to Birmingham. And I remember distinctly going to, I wish I could remember her name. She was one of the only survivors of the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing. She was in Buffalo recently. Mm-hmm. And or a couple of months ago. Anyways, one of the few things that I remember was a department store called Pizzet's. My grandmother took me, and I went to get some water. And I didn't know, I'm from Pittsburgh, I didn't know colored from for color from white. And I just, and I remember one of the few memories that I have of my grandmother almost giving me whiplash because she yanked me so hard. That because I was going to drink mm-hmm. out of a white fountain. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand that. I know I was mad at her for a long time, but I didn't understand fully why she did that to me. And it wasn't until I was probably a young adult that it fully clicked in, the significance of it. That
doing that, yeah.
Yeah.
Gary, what about you? What would you think about what Betty Jean's...
Well, I understand the experience. I will freely admit that I never visited the South as a child. I went down after I was an adult. And why did I never go as a child? Because my grandmother, who left South Carolina in 1925 with my uncle in hand and my father in utero after her husband, I believe, and I've gotten bits of the story, but never the whole thing, had been murdered by whites. She never saw any reason to go back. It was one of those things where she told me all the stories I needed to hear. And later, after she was in Buffalo, she remarried, and the man who was my grandfather had come from North Carolina. And again, my grandmother was from Charleston. So that sense of what the South was instilled in me when I was very young, number one. And number two, I watched, growing up, the civil rights movement unfold on the nightly news. And as I did, my grandmother sat and cried like a baby, and I held her hand. So I knew very well what this whole thing involved.
I think one of the things that people have that this was a civil rights movement was all about altruism and people wanting to do right about things. Civil rights movement was about money. The South could not rise and flourish with a segregated system. You couldn't have restaurants.
Like Ronald Reagan, are you talking about the time when he?
No, I'm talking about. I'm talking about going back from the beginning. You know, the mm-hmm. Rosa Parks thing was mm-hmm. her sitting on the bus. That wasn't the first time it happened, nor was it just a spontaneous thing.
No,
it was planned.
It was that
and it was planned, and it was planned by liberal whites in the NAACP mm-hmm. that basically came up with this plan. So they could take it to court.
Because
so,
had been a young woman.
I mean, so my point is that it just, if this you think the civil rights movement was about we're just trying to do right by black people, it's not. It was about money. After the civil rights movement of the 60s, the South rose up, and it's flourishing even to this day, because they could not have an economic system with a two-tiered economic system.
But Frank, I could very well argue that the whole business of the Civil
Slavery,
War
exactly.
was about economics.
Exactly, exactly.
And racism was a byproduct.
Exactly.
But the whole reason for the Civil War was a matter of
Northern capitalists could not compete with slave trade.
Absolutely.
So I mean, this whole idea we just want to do right by that's crap.
And I was going to say to Betty Jean, that when you were talking about not seeing the flag, in 1962, they raised that flag on the dome in the Capitol building. And in year 2000, they moved it. It's still on Capitol grounds, but now it's in facing a Confederate memorial or statue or something like that. But it wasn't until 1962 that they actually raised that flag at the Capitol.
Well, wow. Terry McKelvey, just hold on a minute, Joan. Terry McKelvey is just joining, and I just wanted to welcome him to our roundtable here. We have been talking about some of the experiences that people had, and the only one that's actually had any experience who grew up in the South during a time when you couldn't go into restaurants, you couldn't go into store, was Betty Jean Grant, who's on our live line right now. And we were giving some responses to that.
And who are the rest of these people here, Mary?
They're all Northerners for the most
They're
part.
They're all Northerners, okay. Well, I recognize a few of them, you know, but going around to give names. No, from what I heard, and I apologize for coming in late, and I only heard the very tail end, so I will look to hear a little more before I comment in the dark.
We have been talking about the flag and what it meant. So there's one other thing that I think probably caused a lot of people, Joan, I'll get back to caused a lot of people to have questions about. And I don't know if anybody around this table or even anybody in this building, they were talking about the people in the church and the way that they handled situations. Personally, I am still angry. I could not have sat there and forgiven anyone who just blew my grandfather's brains out. I haven't reached that stage, but I consider these people are probably very Christ-like, since Christ, when he was on the cross, said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." I don't know if I could have. I have not, certainly not anywhere near that state of grace. But I'll start with Gary, and perhaps each of you can say how you would respond to that. I'm sure that they were wonderful people and did so. And I really wanted to ask Terry, since he was here, he's an attorney, and also Frank, who deals in a lot of court situations. I never saw a bond hearing. I didn't think that you made speech. I didn't think the judge made speeches at a bond hearing. You know, but that's something that you can kind of take up, too, that he was way out of line. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. I would think.
Yeah, I think we can all immediately agree to that wasn't the purpose. But he had the stage, and he took advantage of it.
Well, it was made for TV,
yes,
basically. You know, and that's why he did it. But, you know, going around, I just want to ask each of you what you felt, and could you have did what those people did in Mother Emanuel Church? Gary?
I could have done it. I wouldn't have felt it in my heart, but I would have understood, which I think the people in this church did understand, that this crime was so heinous. You go in and they're saying, "Why are you shooting us? You've got to stop." And you say, "I can't. You're taking over the country and you're raping all our women as you shoot an 87-year-old woman." That's horrifying. Why did you go there to shoot people? Because you knew people at a prayer meeting wouldn't be armed. So that was horrifying in and of itself. What would make it more horrifying and would cause change would be the willingness of someone to say, "I forgive you." And you see right now there's a movement, Governor Haley and other Southern governors, congressmen, people are calling for the taking down of the Confederate flag in the spirit of Ronald Reagan. Southern people, tear down that flag. Well, that happens, I think, in part because people had the foresight to say, "I forgive you." And it might take their hearts a long time to catch up. It would take my heart a long time to catch up. But I've been on stage. I can act when I need to.
What about you,
Frank? Well, I mean, first of all, a lot have been made about them forgiving. And if you remember, a few years ago, in 2006, it was 10 Amish kids or 6 Amish kids shot and killed.
And, you know, a 20 in Newtown.
Right. Yeah, well, the Amish kids, the community came out and forgave them. Mm-hmm. And nobody made a big deal out of that. And I don't think the forgiveness is for him. Nobody's saying forgive him, let him go. No. The forgiveness is for their own soul, their own. When you're in such a state of shock and grief, you need some solace within yourself. And you're basically trying to.
So you don't think that they forgave him?
No, I think that, I mean, they forgave the deed, you know, but I think that the forgiveness is for the person, not for him himself. Nobody says, "Well, forgive him, let him go free." Nobody would even suggest that. Mm-hmm. They just follow your Christian belief. You need something to hold on to, and mm-hmm. hopefully that God can, by forgiving, God will give you some solace, not for him. I don't know why people are making a big deal out of this as though it's, "How dare them forgive this guy?" Nobody really. This rhetoric gets.
I don't think people said "how dare." I think people are just confused about why. I'm saying I probably couldn't. I just haven't reached that state. But I don't think most people are saying "how dare they do it." People just wondering, could they have?
I think it hurts him more by forgiving him. You know, you ever been in a beef with somebody and they forget and they say, "Oh man, I'm sorry, I forget." automatically, you know, you feel bad. You know, I think that's just human nature. You know, the bottom line is rhetoric. You know, thinking, saying they forgive him is nothing but rhetoric. Nobody's saying, well, forgive him, let him go. It's no big deal, you know.
What about you, Joan?
Well, you know, first of all, I thought it was inappropriate for them to be sticking microphones in their faces, asking them after such a horrendous evil act, how they felt about it.
Right.
I think the natural human reaction, I know mine was, I don't think I've ever been, and I've been through the civil rights movement, and I don't think I've been as angry where I could taste anger. And I certainly have not reached a point, and I don't advocate violence, but I haven't reached a point where I'm prepared. I don't have it in my heart. I just don't have it. I just don't have it. I just think that we need, as African Americans, black people, however you want to be identified, I think we need a new agenda. And I think it's long past time that, and I'm not advocating violence, but I don't have any more cheeks to turn.
My question is, though, you know, how is this any different than the Columbine or the Colorado shooting when
Newtown?
How is this shooting any different other than there were black people in the church?
Well, it was
perpetrated by a nut who made up this cockamamie. Is ridiculous. Well, the fact that black people were taken. There's nothing about that's true at all.
If you have a white skin, why are you considered, maybe it's a mental thing, but if you have a black skin, you could probably be shot on sight. I'm thinking about how they arrested Mr. Roof, and you said Kerry said he was not about to call him Mr.
Not going to call him Mr.
You know,
let me jump in on this one.
Sure, go ahead.
A lot of people probably disappointed, maybe angry, but I have to be finally honest. We didn't expect and we didn't hear forgiveness when they put two airplanes into the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't hear in the Timmy McVeigh case. We didn't expect that had those people had forgiven him, we would have been shocked. You know, lives were lost in all these incidents by purposeful act, not accidentally. I have a hard time forgiving at this point in time because I'm looking at this little 80-year-old woman, 87 years old, who lived and probably ducked a whole lot of adversary to live so long. She had the right to die in her bed, not to be mowed down in church where she is expressing and she is there for Christian belief. I know it's a Christian act to forgive. But if you say you forgive because that's what God wanted you to do, but you don't really believe that, then that's insincerity. So for me, had it been one of my relatives and he asked me would I forgive at this point in time, I would have to say no, I'm not at that point. And I admire that lady. I'm not sure whose daughter she was an 87-year-old lady or somebody else. But she said, I'm not there yet. I'm striving to find forgiveness in my heart, but I'm not there. And I thought that was the most brutally honest answer that she might have been criticized for, but she was sincere and sane. And so why we put one crime? What if the guy had been African-American who had gone to that church and killed those 9 African-American people? Well, we have
or said, 9 white people.
Well, did that just say, keep it where it is. You probably wouldn't have asked people saying, well, do you forgive him? Because that is soon to do. And I know the Christian thing and the Christian belief, and you're a Christian church, and there was murder in the church, it says forgiveness. But if we have to say ourselves, does that guy race has a factor in people seeking forgiveness? Does it in fact set the stage for life in a mental institution or life in prison when you got capital murder as an option, but you got the whole family have already forgiven him for the murder, so therefore the capital punishment is right off the table. So is it something that's been...
Not necessarily. It's because the family, forgive me, the court mm-hmm. system is not going to implement the capital punishment.
The court system listened to the family in a lot of cases, the capital murder cases. They just did it for the guy who did a bombing in Boston. They listened to the family, so he's going to get the capital punishment. So if everybody has forgiven him for killing their relatives, it's time for a trial. How are you going to forgive the guy and then ask him to be executed?
Well, we have a lawyer sitting here. I don't know.
Well,
I mean, answer that question, Ms. McKelvey. How do you do that?
Well, you know, you're talking about from an emotional perspective. How do you say I forgive him? And at the same time, if you're sitting on the jury, I forgive him, but he should be executed.
And, you haven't forgiven him, right?
Family won't be on the jury.
Well, you know, or to support the position of a jury that cares to execute him or to put him away for life. Listen, to me, this forgiveness thing, to me, is not really the issue. To me, the issue is that this guy, whether you want to refer to him as crazy, and not in an effort to justify what he did, but whatever his problem was, this guy is a victim, like so many of these people are, of hate radio mm-hmm. and of an atmosphere that encourages this directly or mm-hmm. indirectly to one extent or another. And this guy, the things that
think about what Rush Limbaugh said about this whole thing. There was some kind of plot. It wasn't true, you know, and it was liberals' plot to blame, you know, these type of things on unsuspecting whites.
Okay, so Mr. Premier Hate Radio, if you want to bring it down to Rush Limbaugh, but those stations are all over the country. There are virtually no left-wing stations. Well, for the most part, everywhere you hear, if you listen to late-night radio, anywhere you are, if you're a truck driver, this is all you hear. And this is what's popular. This is why Fox News is so successful compared to CNN and compared to MSNBC. Mm-hmm. They're so much more financially successful. They attract these masses of people, and they influence them in many, many ways. And when you start talking about the president is illegal and he's not qualified to be president.
A la Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Or Bill O'Reilly.
And so what happens is you have characters who are weak-minded individuals like this who will take this stuff to heart and see themselves as taking on the nation and representing. They see themselves as kind of a patriot. And that they're going to defend their country. I'm going to help take my country back, is the saying of most of these hate radio stations. Mm-hmm. Who are they taking it back from? Well, for the first time in history, you've got a black president. So, you know, the insinuation is very obvious to most of us. And so here's an individual who has been this weak-minded individual who's been unduly influenced by this, and he reacts. Now, every tragedy, whether it's the bombing of the little girls in Birmingham, whether it's this, there's always a silver lining. There's always something coming. For the first time, you're having this flag come down before national and state houses. You're having it addressed by Walmart and major Fortune 500 companies. Not that I'm saying it's worth it or that it's good that it happened because of those things, but there are these kind of things that awaken people as to what the influence of that flag and people driving around with the flag and people with the bumper sticker or with the flag. There are those of us who say, listen, and I'm going to talk street here for a second. Any crackers that want to walk around with a sheet and a hood is fine with me because I want to know who they are. All they're doing is pointing themselves out to me, and they want to put that sticker on their truck as I'm driving by. I know to be careful of that truck. The problem, I think, with the flag is when you're talking about a government building, you're talking about a flag that represents treason. These people were rebels who rebelled against their country. It was all one country at the time. Mm-hmm. They rebelled against it. They were treasonous. And when you talk about heritage, well, the flag represents a heritage of slavery and holding people against their will and the sale of children from their mothers. That's what the flag represents.
Really?
And if that's the heritage, if you talk about heritage, that's the heritage you're talking about.
You were responding basically to Betty Jean. Betty Jean, did you want to respond to anything that Terry just said?
What he said, that is a flag of treason. That's a flag of a country that lost. And why are we flying the flag of the country we defeated on our public building? That'll be just bad as flying, you know, the flag of Japan in our public building, because that's the South was a nation. There was a nation that had seceded, those states that seceded, and they lost. So therefore, that flag should be relegated.
Well, that's what Terry said. It was one nation, and the South seceded. They were traitors. That's
absolutely
plain old and sentence.
Absolutely. I agree with 100%.
Does anybody else have any remarks that you want to make?
I don't. I don't want to be the cynic here. But to me, the flag is a distraction.
Yes.
And I refuse to be distracted. There, the underlying issue is the fact that here we are in the 21st century, still fighting for dignity, human rights,
and voting rights,
and respect. And the flag is symbolic. Let me tell you something. If it hadn't made it made news, there was an article that I read from Beijing, where they immediately jumped on this because the United States and the United Nations is always on Beijing, China, about their civil rights records and whatever. And so, again, yeah, I think it's nice that they're going to take down that flag, but they need to deal with the issue. And just quickly, for example, there's a group called the Council for Conservative Citizens. They're a white supremacy group. Supposedly, their website was the one that Roof was inspired by. And they determined that they contributed to, and we're talking about the 2016 campaign, Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, among others. And just recently, they decided that they were going to give back that money. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, the fact of the matter is, they knew who this group was. They've been around since 1980s, before they even accepted the money.
Those are those people's base.
Okay, exactly. So what I'm saying is, here's another symbol, another symbolic gesture. Now they're going to give back the money. In fact, I think it was Cruz who said, who got $8,500, who said that he was going to contribute it to the families of the victims in Charleston. Now, I found that particularly insulting. Okay. Again, another symbol. But the fact of the matter is that is their base, Frank. And that's where, and we're going into an election cycle.
It's the whole Republican right wing is base,
right.
Basically.
Because so they can make all the symbols they want.
Let me just sort of let our listeners know who's doing the talking right now. On our panel is Gary Earl Ross, and Gary is a playwright and an author, and he is also a retired SUNY professor, Professor Emeritus, now, I believe. Mm-hmm. And there's Joan Simmons, and she's a founder, and it has a very, very long name. I'll just put it as an activist. And, of course, there's Terry McKelvey, who's a practicing attorney here in Buffalo, and he practices general law. And we also have Frank Gist, who owns a business, Greater Buffalo Bail Bond, and he's also a columnist, and his column appears in the Buffalo Criterion. It's called Is That Right? And just wanted to make sure that we knew who we were talking about.
Okay, Mary, let me respond.
You forgot about me, didn't you?
Oh, I forgot about it. I sure did. And we have on our live line is Betty Jean Grant. She's minority leader. She's a Democrat of the Erie County Legislature. Sorry about that, Legislator Grant. Did you want to respond to anything that Jean said? I will go back to you since I made that boo-boo.
Someone told me, okay, I'm playing devil's advocate. From 1776 until 1860s, the flag of the United States was a flag that supported slavery in certain cities. In fact, those states that didn't secede from the Union, who had slaves for hundreds of years, flew and was under the domain of the flag of the United States, the American flag. So they said, how can you say that the Confederate flag should not be flying with the United States flag that we pay allegiance to has flown on state and capitol buildings that condone slavery. So how do we answer people that make that argument?
I have an answer for that in part.
Yes.
This is Gary Earl Ross.
Okay,
in terms of the flags, the one thing that the American flag symbolizes is the United States, which is highly flawed as a nation. But by virtue of its constitution, has made greater strides in actually changing things about the human condition than most other cultures, nations in history. And what it is that what we do, we perhaps set the standard for other parts of the world. And I'm responding to Betty Jean about the flag. We sort of set the tone for a lot of things because And my letter to the editor recently had this line: "When we learn better, we do better." A lot of places don't do that, but we also had more stars come on the flag as other states got in. So the flag has changed. The stars and bars have not changed, mm-hmm. but the American flag has changed as we've added. So I mean that's sort of a devil's advocate response to that. I would like to just go back to the point about hate radio, because I want to say that it's more than hate radio, and probably much more in terms of the internet, because Dylann Roof is a ninth grade dropout who knew enough about apartheid, which ended before he was born, to call himself the last Rhodesian online. Where does that come from? That comes largely from internet sources, because on hate radio, they use the code words, they push the buttons, but they don't give the specifics. In his manifesto, which I read, Root claimed that the Council of Concerned Citizens, that website is what, you know, opened his eyes. Mm-hmm. And from that point, he realized that the country needed to have a race war. And that was an online kind of thing. And there's so much online with anonymity these days that people, I mean, the vilest things imaginable come out of people's mouths or out of their computers. And they end up online, and they do find like-minded people. And some of this, I did an article on hate speech on the web a number of years ago. And I felt like I needed to, I should have put my computer through a steam bath afterward. It was just really vile stuff.
I think one of the things we aren't discussing is the fact he kept bringing up that black people are raping their white women. I think the stem out of that is a racial insecurity on his part. He's mm-hmm. looking around and he can't get a girlfriend or whatever like that, and because all the black people that took my girlfriends. I mean, and we can't discount that.
Well, Frank, also another point that you're making right now, you know, you look at African-American people in the United States now. Do they look like anybody that got off the boats in the first part of slavery? When African-Americans first came, we were all black. But look at African-Americans now. You can tell an African
Well, some of the prophecies say that they would be allowed to touch our bones. But let me make reference here to what we're talking about, the flag being a symbol. Of course the flag is a symbol. All of these things are symbols, and we're not demonstrating or fighting about the flag. The flag only comes up because of this recent incident, because this individual, whether it's the internet, whether it's hate radio, whether it's shortwave radio, half these people can't read, and so the internet is not necessarily it, except what they can hear it or hear some audio. So whether it's hate radio, and I listen to hate radio because I like to know what the other side, what they're talking about, and I'm telling you, it's so dramatic and it's so impacting on people, weak-minded people mm-hmm. like this, that it has an undue influence. Most of them, I don't believe, are reading internet sites and therefore getting this. That, not that they don't, but half of them are not even capable, but they are mostly incited, I believe, by radio and by organizations that they affiliate
with.
Site. Yeah, no question. And he's incited by others who are influencing him and people like him are influenced by people in such organizations, and they carry word of mouth and they'll carry that mm-hmm. and distort it. But what I'm saying is that what we really have, the overall issue is, when you're talking about, is the flag a symbol? Should we be dealing with the Voting Rights Act? Of course. Should we be dealing with Citizens United devastating this country, with the Supreme Court coming down with that kind of a decision, totally undermining this country and putting it up for sale to unknown people who have money. Of course there are issues that we should be addressing. However, the flag becomes an issue only because it's symbolic of an individual who's showing that there is a certain culture out there, of which that flag is a symbol of a lot of people who identify with it for those reasons of what it originally represented with regard to the inferiority of black people.
Let me jump in here, too. Mm-hmm. And I think it has something to do with Donald Trump said it, and Dylann Roof said it as well, is that they're taking over our country. He doesn't mean just African-American. I think he means immigrants in general. I think the action of he and others like him, including Tate Radio, is they see in 25, 30, 40, 50 years is no longer the our country as it pertains to European descent.
Right, non-white immigrants,
back
Betty.
As much they mm-hmm. can because they're raping our women. Didn't Donald Trump say that about Mexicans sending
sure
us
did.
His word?
Yep, those sending their murderers did. And drug dealers.
And guess what? He's moved up in the polls as a result.
Absolutely. But how long has they have used the immigration trying to steer that? Because they see, they know in 50 years this country will not be minority European. And so they're fighting back the way they can. And so who's vulnerable? Those who are not educated from our side of the track. And so they blame welfare for them not getting a job. They blame people who don't want to work and having 5, 6, 25 babies, when in fact, due to the ratio, most people European descent are having those babies than African American or Latino. So I think Dylan was saying they're taking our country. I think he just means at those little African American in at those churches or in the South. I think he meant people who are not white.
Yeah, and on top of we keep saying that about the poor and uneducated. Most of these race baiters, I doubt very much if Rush Limbaugh is poor.
Oh,
most of these other people are, and they're biggest perpetrators of this. And many of these people who form these organizations and to set up these blogs are certainly not uneducated.
But
they're certainly not poor.
No,
but they're profiting.
And they're profiting, Gary.
That's
actually,
it. It's money. It's always everything is about money.
They may know what they're saying is
that
totally
was
untrue.
Frank's argument in the beginning.
Yeah,
when
it's
he was
all about money. And they profit when you tune in and listen to those shows too.
Well, It didn't take a Dylan Roof for me to
stop saying his name, really. I mean, you know, we're giving okay. him way too much.
Well,
you know,
I say it for a reason because I didn't need that incident in Charleston to remind me of the level of racism and hate in this country.
But Joan, a lot of people did.
Well,
a lot of people do not understand, and black people don't understand the circumstances in this country and that there is racism. I had a guy the other day, he was like, I don't want to be called African American, and I'm not black. My tire of my car is black, but I'm not black. I mean, you got that mentality out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't think that, I think as people of color, if you want, not offending anybody, black, African American. I think we need a new agenda. And clearly, turning the other cheek and being docile and be, you know, one of the first questions they asked was, is it going to be peaceful? Well, come on now. You have some idiot racist go into a church and kill 9 people. And the first thing they want to know is, is it going to be peaceful?
You know, black people
riot?
Going to be
exactly.
Peaceful.
Are you going to riot? And I'm thinking to myself, they ought to be glad I wasn't down there.
Because that's cost money. That's why.
And
let's not forget, this wasn't the first time we had violence. Martin Luther King's mother was killed in the church.
She sure was.
Yeah, in the church. And we kind of forget that, you know. So it's not the first time there was violence in the church.
And little girls in Birmingham.
Right, and little girls in Birmingham.
Yeah,
so
that was shot.
And that points to a larger problem in America, though. We do have an inclination toward violence, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. That's a whole other program. But let's go back to the racism a bit, and let's not talk about the overt racism, but the covert racism that exists not only in various aspects of white Americans, but also in black Americans. And I will bring up Rachel Dolezal, okay? Now, Rachel Dolezal was identifying as a black woman, president of the Spokane, Washington NAACP, and so forth.
And I think and she
the
was
big
criticized
expose,
because
and
she was a white woman trying to be black. And
right.
I don't think white people could understand. How would you dare want to shed off that privilege?
But see, but that's the thing. If somebody black passes for white, nobody asks why. Mm-hmm. They may say, how dare you, mm-hmm. but nobody asks why. Mm-hmm. Why? Because we all understand that it's easier on the other side.
Yeah, but you know what? I need to comment about her.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't going to because I'm sick and tired of hearing about her. But here's the deal with Rachel. Rachel was an average white woman.
Mm-hmm.
Blue-eyed, she may have been blue-eyed and blonde hair, but she was average.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of millions.
Mm-hmm.
She understood the psychology. She knew to make a distinction, being a light-skinned, blue-eyed black woman was going to get her a lot more leverage than being an average, ordinary, blonde, blue-eyed white woman.
You have a point with that, but I want to make another point in terms of the agenda you want to set.
Betty, you can jump in if you want.
I have an agenda, okay? I have an agenda for America. And maybe we can do it through a tax incentive, but I think everybody should have a DNA test.
Well, that
complete layout of everything you have. And then when you see, because most of us, since the human race originated in Africa, we're going to find, in the case of, like my DNA, I'm 2% hunter-gatherer from Central Africa. Most people are going to wind up with something like that. And when we get that on the DNA test, it's time to remind everybody of the one drop rule, which means once we're all black, it doesn't matter.
Can I just, so again, want to respond to what Joan said about Rachel. Let me just say this, is that, as I mentioned before, there are a lot of black people who don't care about the revolution, who want to sit on the fence, sit on the log. And if there's some white people that want to say, I'm going to get involved with the NAACP, and I'm going to uplift these people, I'm going to contribute in every way. Now, they may be doing it, as Joan is pointing out, for her own glory or her own wanting attention. I don't know what her personal motive is. But if it's going to benefit my people, I don't care if this woman is a part Martian or she's part some other kind of alien being. She's white and she wants to make her hair and make her skin look black. That's irrelevant to me. I want to know, what is she doing? You, by your deeds is how I identify you. And if she's doing good to help uplift my people, right on, sister.
And let's not forget, she went to Howard University. She's been around black people her whole life.
Yeah.
I think her adopted children, siblings were black. So, I understand. I don't object to her. She's putting down on applications that she's black. But I'm not mad at her particularly. We were silly enough to believe she was black.
She obviously was white. I'm just making an observation, which is perfectly true. Anybody that's African-American or black knows that there's as much discrimination among black people as there is white people to black people.
Paper bag test.
It's always been, if you're fair-skinned or light-skinned,
How did you get these?
Look at Walter White. Remember Walter White? He looked like a white man and like any other white man, but they said we was black, so we kind of took his word.
What's his name? Joe's or Jews, who was the former head of the NAACP? Yeah, yeah. Look at him like any white. Uh-uh. But I'm still saying, when this man is talking about raping white women, African Americans look the way they look because grandmothers, great grandmothers, great 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 grandma were all raped by white men. That's how come you got all different colors. And why they wanted to say slavery, the condition of slavery was that of the mother? That's who you followed. That was the condition of the mother. Well, even if the father was the slave owner, your kids were all going to be black because of that one drop or whatever.
I've often said this.
I don't have time to jump in. I think Dylann Roof went to that church. He killed black people. But I think Dylann Roof's primary reason going was he wanted to be relevant. He wanted to be worth something. He wanted to be known.
5 minutes of fame.
The last thing he said was to that lady who he thought was the only survivor, is tell my story. And I think that he knew that killing black folks in a black church was going to give him not only national attention, but international attention. Mm-hmm. And so he's in a history book. And I think this whole motivation, and I really believe that he could have killed 9 white people and had as much attention on him and be as relevant as he is right now, I believe he would have done it.
Well, that's
it was all about him and his contribution to history, whether good or bad. He's in a history book.
Because he's a nobody.
Well, that's basically my point. I said before, is that why are we making a big deal because he killed black people? They killed 20-something people in Colorado and Columbine.
And
you know,
young children, babies almost killed in Newtown.
He was just a nut, and he just used this excuse to kill black people to get more attention.
I don't want to go nut too much, though.
If you kill 9 people, you got to be a nut.
If you're black and you're unarmed, you can be a thug. If you're armed, you're definitely a thug. If you're brown and you're armed, you're a terrorist. If you're white and you're armed, I don't want to give them the nut out. I mean, and I think all of them might be mentally ill, but I don't want that to become the focus because what he did was evil. And that's not, and you can say, well, evil is mental illness. We can have that discussion, but
Betty Jean,
no, let's not make him crazy.
Either, so jump in if
he's something
need.
Else.
I just want to say that don't give him excuse of being nut because he could be just pure evil.
Yes.
Yep.
Adolf Hitler, like Idi Amin, and the rest of those who kill for the pure pleasure of killing or for personal or economic benefit. You don't have to be crazy to kill. You can be evil.
That's
right. I just found it interesting that one of the first things that the media and the powers to be were trying to do was right off the bat is assign some kind of reason for his actions. I mean, the guy came right out and said why he was doing it, and they still can't be it. And now and they're still saying, "Well, wait a minute, maybe it was because these people were Christians." And I'm thinking to myself, or now it's, "Oh well, you know, he's got to be crazy." Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? If you can't help but make the comparisons and how he's being treated.
Mm-hmm.
Then how people who, of color that were in that same similar situation are being treated. I'm sorry. I make that comparison.
Yeah, you're thrown in the back of a paddy wagon in Baltimore and you're hungry, you get to roll around and snap your neck. You know, you shoot up a church full of nine people
and they
take you to Burger King on the way to jail because you're hungry.
Frank, you had something you wanted to jump in your saying. Anybody have a rebuttal to this? We only got about three more minutes. This has been a lively conversation. Anybody else want to do any last words from Frank Gist or Terry McKelvey or Joan Simmons or Gary Earl Ross or our legislator sitting out here on our live line, Betty Jean Grant?
My point is that I don't want to put him on a higher pedestal than the guys at Columbine or the guy that killed all those people in Colorado in the shows. You know, those are people are nuts. I mean, because he killed black people, don't make him a special kind of racist or anything like that.
I don't think he was nuts at all. I think he had some problems. He was just a racist.
So were the guy that killed the people in the show, was he nuts?
Yeah, he. Yeah. They'll say he was crazy.
Or the people that killed the kids, and did he have a hatred for children?
But in this case, in the guy in Colorado, in this case.
The suburb where they killed, I think, three kids and the mother and the father and the nanny. Was he nut? Or was he just nut, or were they just greedy or evil? So, you know,
yeah.
we all might be a little bit mentally ill.
Yeah.
This guy had the temperament to sit there for an hour in a church where he could have backed out at any time, could have walked back, and
absolutely.
They would never have known he had the gun. So if he's crazy, he wasn't too crazy to be too conniving and too cunning that they didn't know that he was there to cause harm.
We only got about 2 minutes left in our broadcast, folks. I'm going to go around here and give each of you have maybe about 30, 40 seconds. Gary, can you just...
I'm going to ascribe evil to him, okay? Almost anybody can kill, but it's hard to kill somebody you know, hard to kill somebody you break bread with or you share a prayer with or you talk to for any length of time, because no matter who it is, he picks up on your humanity or she does, and you pick up on his or hers. And then suddenly you're having a human exchange. If you can sit and talk with somebody for a half hour when they're bearing their souls, which is what prayer is, you're bearing your soul to God. If you can sit and do that and then kill somebody who's done that in your presence for an hour, that's evil.
Joan, can you use your...
Well, I still repeat. I think as African Americans or black people, we need a new strategy.
Terry?
Yeah, I think that, you know, whether we get into the definition of insanity or what, people who are weak-minded, I don't care if it's with ISIS or if it's with any other radical organization, if they're weak-minded and easily unduly influenced, it can lead to any kind of disaster.
Frank?
Basically, I like I said, I don't want to subscribe him to a higher level of having mental defect than anybody else. I'm saying he's just a person who had a mental desire to kill people, and he carried it out. But I don't think he's going to bring on the race war that he wanted to.
No.
Betty Jean, you got the last word.
I don't think he was crazy. I think he was just self-serving, attention-grabbing, wanted spotlight, and he knew if he killed nine people in a church, he'd be the top of the conversation for months in this world.
So is capital punishment, should we have the capital punishment?
I don't believe in capital punishment. I think maybe life imprisonment is even worse. Mm.
Makes me think about Mark David Chapman, who said, "The Beatles changed the world, and I changed the Beatles." And that's exactly it. You're right, Betty Jean. He wanted attention.
And I want to thank our listeners this morning and all my guests, and we did have five of them. which I was reminded many times by Frank Gist.
six guests.
That was Frank Gist, Terry McKelvey, Joan Simmons, and Gary R. Ross, and the Honorable Betty Jean Grant, who's out there on our live line. Thank you all for being my guests this morning, and hope you all have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Mary Davis Show. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Mary Davis, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.